This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-lickin' good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
A lot of wires, and last night I started crying.
You guys, literally every time we're about to record and we're setting up, and this is one of the reasons, okay, as we've been doing this new video setup, I have to walk Rachel through for the last like 3 episodes of how everything needs to be connected so we can hear her. So
correct. It's part of my charm. It's part of my charm.
Yes, it is. I can't pronounce anything and she doesn't know how to use a computer.
It's true.
Welcome to Rivera and Reeves, the podcast where we break through the bias, report the news, and occasionally trip over our soapboxes while ranting about the headlines.
Every week, we tackle the biggest stories with sharp analysis, unfiltered honesty, and just enough sarcasm to keep it fun.
So pull up a chair, grab your coffee, and join us as we wade through the spin, because the media is trash and we have zero patience for their nonsense.
Hey, friends, welcome back to another episode of Rivera and Reeves. I'm Miss Sadie, and I'm here with my friend Rachel. Say hello, Rachel.
Hello, Rachel.
If this is your first time here, welcome. You have found your new favorite podcast. We're here every Tuesday and Thursday ranting and raving about the headlines. If you are listening to us on your favorite podcasting app, make sure you hit that follow button so you don't miss another episode. And if you want to dabble in some video, please consider subscribing to our new YouTube channel, where right now we're only releasing segments. As soon as we get all of our technological issues lined up, Rachel, we will be...
It's true.
Well, the plan is to release full episodes on YouTube. But if you want ad-free episodes, unedited episodes, and if you want access to our episodes early, please consider becoming a paying supporter on our Substack, where you'll get a dedicated podcast feed and have access to the videos early. All right.
And so you'll get unfiltered too.
Yeah.
Unfiltered.
You get unfiltered, you get community. There's all kinds of little goodies that we're working on. So there is a link in the show notes. Make sure you go ahead and check that out. So what are we talking about today? Okay.
A lot.
Okay. We're going to hit some, you know, breaking news, quick takes, just to kind of give you an update on what is going on in the news. And then I think the most of the episode, we'll see how it goes. We're going to discuss and break down the press conference that happened yesterday on Capitol Hill with the Epstein victims that was organized by Ro Khanna and Massey, representatives of California and Kentucky. So, but first, Rachel has some feelings about something that happened late last night after my phone. So have I told you this, that I've actually set up my phone to lock me out of certain apps for bedtime?
So do you have like that brick thing?
Yeah, I got a brick.
Okay.
Because, you know, I'm like an addict. Let's just be honest. First step to addiction is to confess that you have a problem. And mm-hmm. it was keeping me up too late at night.
Yeah.
And so I got a brick, I set it up, and now it blocks my apps starting at 10 o'clock, which honestly, I should probably do it at 9.
I was going to say, I have been asleep for like 45 minutes by then.
No.
Do it at 8 and change your life, Mercedes.
No, well, I can't. I can't go that far. But
now, can you get text messages?
Because you can set which apps you want to still allow to come through. So like phone calls will still come through. Text messages will still come through. I can still see my news, like articles, if I want to do that. But the stuff that was really a problem was like Instagram, TikTok, YouTube, Hulu.
Twitter.
Yeah. Well, because I'll get a caught on a television show, and then I'm like, oh, I'll just watch one more episode while I'm in bed. And next
do you
thing
get
I know,
my signal messages? That's what really matters.
Okay, yes, great. That's all that matters.
As long as I have not bricked out. That's all
No. About. Like emergency communications, people can still communicate with me, but the social media, I was like, I got to block this. This isn't good. And
good.
My brick is downstairs, so not only am I blocking the apps, but the fact that I'm kind of lazy about going downstairs to do stuff also prevents me from laying in bed and first thing in the morning. Like I get up to go unlock my phone.
How much is the brick? We're giving them like free advertising here.
Yeah, they're not sponsored. I think like $70 or something like that. Okay. And you can set up different categories. You can block different apps. It's very customizable. And you can set it on a schedule. And to unlock it, you have to physically get up and unlock the phone.
It's like, forget it. No, I'm just lazy enough to where that would really work for me, actually.
Yeah. Well, and so, I mean, actually in the morning, sometimes I'm starting to forget to unlock my phone, which is kind of good.
Smart.
Honestly.
Okay. You're being very proactive and mature, Miss Sadie.
If I was mature, I wouldn't need a brick. Let's be honest.
Yeah. Hey, baby steps.
But all of that to say, I missed the... What happened yesterday with Trump?
I mean,
like, she has feelings about this that she wants to share.
I do have feelings about it. And these are not going to be a surprise to anybody who is a regular listener here or who follows me on social media. I make it very clear that I hate like the tomfoolery on like of posting the like coming out of the president's, you know, socials and the White House's official accounts. I hate
that bothers me
the
more.
Memes. Yeah, I hate the memes. Okay, so this is, you know, I mean, it bothers me that the president does it, but he was elected with literally everybody who voted for him knowing that this is his brand, this is his vibe, it is what it is.
Okay. His jam.
Yeah. And so Dan Scavino posted on
and
Twitter
he's the
last
White
night.
House press secretary, deputy press secretary.
Just yeah. So he posted maybe like an hour or two before I went to bed, like Donald Trump's something. I should look it up.
It's going to break the internet or something.
Yeah,
like
it's going to break the internet. And I was like, oh, great. What's happening and why would they do this late at night? Like, what? I'm going to bed. Forget it. I'll just have to find out in the morning. And so I did go to bed. And then I woke up to format the Dawn Dispatch, my morning newsletter, and just Donald Trump's truths are everywhere, starting off with an inflated, bulbous photo, AI obviously enhanced or whatever program they use, of Rosie O'Donnell's face. So like it's, you know, a double wide there that they've taken, and basically a truth that they're still weighing the option of revoking her American citizenship because she's a bad American and she's never going to be one. Okay, so he puts that on a truth. The White House, the official account of the White House, reshares it on Twitter, and they're like, she's incapable of being a good American. And I'm like,
I don't like that.
I'm sick of getting sick of this stuff. Like, and I'm also sick of saying it because so for the first couple months, Trump would put out like the Pope, you know,
himself
AI video.
Is a Pope. So like for me, it's
or
two
like
different
the Gaza
things.
One and stuff. Yeah. And I would say, I hate this. I hate it, whether that's the White House or the president, but I just hate it. And people are like, oh, stop. This is his thing. Give it a break.
But
stop
I
being
think
a prude.
They're in this situation, we're talking about two different things because I do not like what he put out yesterday. He put that out and then he put another one of Chris Christie and
Jamie Pritzker.
Like sumo wrestling.
Sumo
right?
wrestling. Like an AI generated video.
Yeah. So the other ones, like, I don't think they're great, but they were
he put
poking
his face
fun
on Mount Rushmore. Yeah.
Well, but he was poking fun at himself. Like it was self-deprecating of himself or he was talking about himself. In this situation, he's talking like Rosie O'Donnell. I mean, she went on a rant, recently about the shooter at Annunciation Church, which was
I mean, she's always
unhinged.
Had Trump derangement syndrome, right? We can all
but
agree
no
on that.
Reason.
But why are you picking on this woman? Who cares?
Correct.
She's not even in the country anymore. I think she moved to like
Ireland
or something.
Yeah.
Like, who cares? And that's the kind of stuff where I'm like, she lives rent-free in your head. Why are you talking about her? You are the most important man in the world. Go do your job. And then the White House officials, like, what office is like rubber stamping that, like, yeah, you know what? That's a good idea to represent, you know, the most esteemed
well, and
professional
I also think it's
office.
Weird that Scaravino was posting like Trump's going to break the internet. And then that's what ended up coming out
right.
as if like,
I know.
I'm expecting break the internet. Like he's going to have some amazing news
right.
or some foreign policy issue or something along those lines. And then mm-hmm. he comes out with this trash.
Yeah.
And, you know, I can be a lot more tolerant when he's poking fun at himself. Mm-hmm. But I don't like it when, like, at what point, like, who cares about Rosie O'Donnell? Seriously.
No one.
Rosie O'Donnell is so 2015. Like, the mm-hmm. feud between Trump and Rosie O'Donnell is so 2015. Like, it's ridiculous. I'm over it. And then even the Chris Christie and Pritzker thing, I don't even see
Why?
What the point to that is.
No, but he continually references them like in random, and the media baits him like in pressers.
Yeah.
They'll ask like, well, what do you think about Pritzker? What do you think about
Chris
Christie?
Yeah, but he's Christie? The like, doofus that takes
yeah,
the bait.
No one is thinking about Chris Christie, not one American. And then they'll still ask him questions because then he'll say stuff like he did last week or 2 weeks ago when he's like, he's fat. He's a slob. He needs to be at the gym more. Blah, blah, blah. It's like, stop it. Just stop all of it. And then the White House especially, stop resharing this stuff.
That to me is even
I hate
like,
it.
Worse.
I hate it.
Because it's
all
one
of it.
Thing and it's expected, like Trump and his personal account on Truth, like annoying, not good, but whatever. But for the White House to then repost it.
I hate it.
It's embarrassing, frankly.
Yeah. Yep. So that's where I'm at. He was posting stuff about Gavin Newsom. I didn't even watch all of them. There was some video of Gavin Newsom with like a super long neck or whatever. I'm like, forget this. This is beneath
was
my...
Was it Newsom
I don't even have
or
time.
Was it... oh my gosh. What is his name? Not Schmidt. Good.
Oh my gosh.
Adam Schiff.
Adam Schiff. It could have been. He really was like putting out, he was rapid fire sharing this stuff last night. So
yeah.
That's my rant. I hate it. I hate the unprofessional nature of this administration, which is not of all the administration, but of this kind of stuff, because they are doing so many good things. And then
it's
they're sprinkling like things that like a immature 11-year-old boy would be posting if he had social media. And
yeah.
So I don't know. I don't like it. I don't like it at all. Their rant over.
Well, before he was posting these memes, let's hit some news here at the top.
Okay.
One of the big things is it was earlier this week. It says U.S. forces conducted kinetic airstrike on a Venezuelan. I do it in English and Spanish, both in my head, mm-hmm. and I get confused. On a Venezuelan's boat carrying drugs for the cartel. The Los Soles, I think, is the report. Although I've also heard it was Trendaragua, so I'm not 100% sure who it was.
Yeah, so did I. That's who I heard, Trendaragua.
Yeah. But the point is that, I don't know if you guys know, but about a week and a half, 2 weeks ago, the U.S. deployed naval ships along with 4,000 service members mm-hmm. to the coasts of Venezuela. Well, then yesterday, I believe it was, that, yes, the vessel being tied to Tren de Aragua and the cartel, the Solas, conducting operations to ship drugs, literally got blown up.
Yeah. Like, as in, like, gone.
As in, boom, it is gone. And, in fact, I think, do I have collection? Let's see. I think I have a link here. There we go. So it looks like a little fishing boat, although it's hard to tell when you're looking at it from afar. The reports are that it was 11 people were killed in this strike. And in a moment here, if you're those who are watching, you're going to see this. There it goes. It's gone.
It is no mas.
No mas. Fishing ship go boom. So now there's a lot of discussion happening around this. There are, of course, people that are supporting it, specifically yeah. because the administration has categorized the cartels in Venezuela as terrorist organizations. And
yeah.
they, by categorizing them as terrorist organizations, legally, they have a little bit more leeway of how to deal with them. However, also, traditionally, what has been done with situations such as these with cartels, but I believe usually in like international waters or American waters.
Yeah.
This was off the coast of Venezuela. But typically the Coast Guard, obviously, so if it was the Coast Guard would go and pick them up, bring them, arrest them, and then they would go through the entire criminal process. But the Coast Guard would be off the coast of the United States. This was in international waters or right off the coast of Venezuela. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So the legal ramifications here are, I think, up for debate. And
yeah, when I reported on it yesterday. Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
No, go ahead. No, like
when I reported on it yesterday, it was because it was in international waters that it was being reported that they didn't think that Maduro would be as like abrasive, obviously, about this happening. So it wasn't going to elicit the same, you know, retaliatory response that it would be otherwise. I mean, that doesn't mean that he's not going to be seen as a direct threat, but, you know.
Well, I mean, the thing is, though, that I don't even know exactly what Venezuela would be able to do in response.
Exactly.
Like, if they were to respond.
What are they going
to
do? What are they going to do? Blow up one of our ships? That would be a bad move. Like, inadvisable.
Well, and they, you know, we also have to understand that things are definitely escalating in the area. Mm-hmm. Marco Rubio's over there. He met with the president of Mexico on the issue. He's been doing speeches specifically addressing the situation. And the U.S. government has put a bounty on Maduro, which I have mentioned before, so and designated him as an illegitimate leader and the state in the country of Venezuela as a narco traffic, what is it, a narco terrorist trafficking state. So things are definitely increasing over there. What was interesting, though, is that after these strikes happened, you started seeing some Democrats respond to it. Let me see if I have that clip here. And this is a collection of tweets or X posts from Democrat talking heads, mostly. I'm not going to say these weren't any Democrat leaders, but, you know, just content creators, talking heads. And where they all collectively, like, for example, drug trafficking is a crime, not an act of war. Traffickers must be arrested, not summarily executed, which U.S. forces just illegally did. One of the Krasikstein brothers goes and he says, why couldn't the Coast Guard just board the boat leaving Venezuela, arrest the people and get more information on who they were working for? Why did they have to kill the people? So there was multiple, there's been a lot of discussion about, especially from Democrat circles, kind of bringing in the legal question of this, which I guess, I mean, is fair, obviously, to ask whether or not the federal government should have a right to do this. But then again, I mean, the point being is that this is probably going to be coming up for some kind of debate at some point, because it is without question a new and very different strategy. And so we'll kind of see how that pans out. But as of right now, the Democrat talking heads, again, are siding with the drug dealers.
Yeah. And not even considering bringing up the fact that we have a humongous drug trafficking issue inside our country. Like, it's an afterthought to them. This couldn't possibly be why the Trump administration is taking action. It's just because they want to, what, they are bored and they're, like, bloodthirsty.
Well, and I just think it's very, you know, curious to... Yeah, I don't get it. Now, it is definitely, I mean... This isn't really much in the news, but it is a big concern for, and I've mentioned this before, in Puerto Rico, because this is pretty much right off the coast of the island. There are concerns that the United States is going to go ahead and take possession of their formerly closed military bases on the island. And clearly there's a lot of discussion about and debate about independence or statehood. They're going to be having a vote here recently, which it's another one of these votes that's not going to account for anything because it has to be recognized by Congress and it's not going to be, but about whether like independent statehood and everything. But this would bring into question that clearly at no point is the United States going to let go of the island because of where it is strategically and how clearly this administration is focused on how China and Russia are moving into Latin America. So. Yeah. We usually don't talk about Latin America, but I would definitely keep it on your radar because it is it is on the administration's agenda without a question.
Yeah. Yep.
Okay. Absolutely. Moving on to the next story. I want to give you guys an update on the mayoral race in New York, because even though most of, like, a lot of you aren't in New York, it's definitely a I don't know, like a canary in the coal mine situation, mm-hmm. especially since Mandani is a communist who is running for, I'm going to say.
Correct.
He is a communist.
Yes. Cheers.
Okay.
Cheers. Yes.
I'm not going to soft pedal this. Oh, he's a so. No. The man is a communist that is trying to portray himself as a Democrat socialist who, interestingly, has gotten endorsement from the Democrat Socialist Party and is now currently trying to distance himself from that party because he knows it's not good for him.
No, it's not.
Now, mind you, right now, for a long time, he's running, and then there's Andrew Adams and Silva. Silva's supposed to be the Republican in the in the election.
He's the one that wears the hats, if you're paying attention.
Correct. He wears a little red beret. So the vote was split amongst those three, and even within that with that split, Mandani was still winning. Right now, polls are showing that if the other two were to drop out, Cuomo could possibly win the election.
Yeah.
So there are rumors.
It seemed to be like a pretty strong showing if the other two dropped out, like that he would be likely.
I mean, it's still close, but it's significant.
Yeah.
Like it matters.
That's huge. So then what did the Trump administration do, Mercedes?
Well, the rumor is that the Trump administration is trying to offer Adams and even Silva some position in the administration in order to entice them to drop out. So Cuomo can then, you know, hopefully get their votes and then defeat Mandani. Mandani is messaging this as Cuomo having a Trump endorsement, which in New York City would not be a good thing. Cuomo has to be very aware of this, and he is making efforts to distance himself from Trump, which I don't blame him. I think that's the wise thing to do. I think if anything, this is just, again, a demonstration of how weak these candidates are for New York mayor. Yeah. But keep an eye out on that. Adams has said that he hasn't definitively said, I'm not talking to the administration or no, but he is hemming and hawing on it. Silva has said he's absolutely not withdrawing. However, Silva is not as much of a threat as Adams is for Cuomo.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if Adams actually took it. It's not like he has tons and tons of friends on the Democrat side of the aisle right now.
I think he's polling at like 11% or something like that. Or
he has much more to gain than he has to lose if he was to go work for the Trump administration. And he could brand himself later as kind of a nonpartisan type of guy that works well with others. And Trump's playing chess right now. It's kind of what he did with Stefanik, right? Beforehand, and everybody was really ticked that he kind of did that to her, but he's just being strategic, that's all. And when you're dealing with a race including a guy like Mamdani, like, you have to pull out all the stops, you know, unless you just want to see New York go down in a burst of flames.
And honestly, who's more New York than, I mean, Trump is going to have an interest in this.
Yes, of course. He loves New York. He has said that in press conferences when they've asked about Mamdani. He was like, it's sad. I love that. I love that place. But it's sad what's happened to it.
So we'll keep an eye on that and see if there's any new news about that. Mm-hmm. Currently right now, which we're not going to go any into details about, but Robert F. Kennedy is before the Finance Senate Committee, going toe-to-toe with the senators over the funding and the practices of the MAHA movement and his plans as over at the CDC and NIH. And definitely check out, like, it's literally going on right now, so we can't go in depth about it.
They're being brutal, though, to him. And I think this is a new RFKJ. Like, in his confirmation hearing, he was kind of more subdued and quiet, obviously, for obvious reasons. He wanted to get confirmed. He couldn't be too caustic. But in this one, they're almost on the verge of yelling at him if they haven't already started. I haven't been watching it for the last
Have.
Yeah. And he is not having it. He's like, no, you guys answer my questions. And they're like, we're the ones answering the questions. And he's like, I'm asking a question. You need to answer it. And they're like, you answer it. You answer it. And he's also like, you guys are lying. You guys are ineffective. You've been sitting up here in Congress for decades, not caring at all about the chronic disease problem with children. And now you care. So I like it. Fiery RFKJ.
I can't remember who was asking him or which senator was talking to him. But at some point, he's like, you're just making stuff up.
Yes, good. goodbye to the diplomacy in these kinds of things, because the Democrats certainly don't adhere to those types of rules. They really don't. They talk over people who are being confirmed or being questioned or testifying. They tell them exactly what they think about them and offer them no time for a rebuttal or to answer a question. So fight fire with fire. That's what I think of those things.
There are definitely some spicy clips coming out of it so far. So if this is a topic of interest to you, there's going to be plenty of material out there on social media here by the end of the day.
Yes,
now,
seriously.
Finally, this one is, I think, very interesting. And I know Rachel has a lot of thoughts about it, but there is news. I'm hoping many of our listeners, I think, because we have audiences that cross-pollinate or whatever, with the Free Press, which is Barry Weiss's publication. And honestly, what she's turning into a news and media empire, which started off on Substack, I think, as Common Sense after she left the New York Times, and now is turned into a pretty big juggernaut in regards to independent media. And what
Definitely on Substack.
And I would legitimately categorize the Free Press as nonpartisan. Now, I think they do lean a little more left than they do right, but that's just my personal opinion in politics. Mm-hmm. However, they're very fair on providing an array of opinions from both left, right, and center. Mm-hmm. And I feel that she's done a pretty good job in creating a new kind of template for what the media should look like again, in an effort to rehab the image or what has happened with the news industry. And so there are, I think Puck News got a scoop about how Paramount is on the verge of acquiring Barry Weiss's Free Press for up to $200 million in valuation, which I think is like crazy.
Mm-hmm.
And this deal reportedly is on the 1 yard line and would essentially hand the keys of CBS News over to Barry Weiss.
I just don't know. Like, I know that that's how it's being worded, but I would want to see those. I'd want to see those papers. I want to know actually how much say she has and everything, because right now, $200 million sounds incredible if you're looking at the financial aspect of it. But so is the freedom to run your organization however you'd like. Like right now, Barry Weiss can do whatever she wants at the Free Press. She can hire who she wants. She can fire. She can make editorial decisions. She can pick the topics. She can emphasize certain things and not do the interviews that she wants. And I wonder what kind of control someone like, or an organization like Paramount or CBS would have over her editorial decisions. That to me is the most fundamental important question, because if they at all are able to feel like they have the ability or the right, the legal right to rein her in and tell her what she can and can't publish, then she's just going to end up exactly where she was at the New York Times, or at the very least, she'll end up being the media that we all have grown tired of.
At
KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-licking good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
Yeah, the way this is being reported is that it's not that CBS is acquiring the Free Press in order to take over the Free Press. It's more like they're acquiring the Free Press to then make CBS more in line with how the Free Press is being run, which is why there's this talk about handing the keys over to Barry Weiss. Now, obviously, the way that's being reported, it sounds good, but how it works out in practice remains to be seen.
Yeah.
And what protections she would set up in order to make sure that she would have actually had that kind of editorial control would be really important.
That's what I want to know about.
Yeah. So I do have concerns about how this could damage the free press, because I think the free press has really mattered in this independent news revival, or not revival, but just like movement that has happened over the last like 5 to 10 years. But in addition to that, I am curious to see if this is, because remember, CBS has been going through a lot of changes right now because of Paramount and acquiring them, and they've been moving certain talent out. Barry Weiss has really created something unique and special at a fraction of the price of what CBS spends in order to produce content and their programs. And so my guess is that they'll probably end up cutting, if she actually does get control, they'll end up cutting a bunch of people over at CBS. So it'll be a huge shakeup. It's just, the question remains to see is like, is CBS recognizing what has happened in the industry and making moves to kind of realign themselves with and create and revive what it is that the news is meant to be.
Yeah. I mean, that'll be interesting because CBS is legacy. So they would have to like totally retrain and reorient their entire project. Like, it's not going to be able to be run the same way it's been run for decades and have the same result that they see Barry Weiss having. Like, they would have to shake things up and it'd have to be run totally different. So I guess it remains to be seen if they're going to be willing to do that. I just am concerned because whenever I hear, no matter what they're saying, the agreement is, whenever I hear something like that, you know, NBC or CBS or Fox is acquiring this, it's like, oh, that, you know, because that was the allure. That was the, you know, really interesting part about the free press, is it was beholden to nobody. And so I am curious to see what happens. But what I think is hilarious, I did see last night, did you send it to me, the clip of Tim Dillon, the comedian?
No, I didn't send that to you.
Yeah, just going off on this whole thing. Like, you got to be kidding me. You know, and he knows Barry Weiss. I think he's been in interviews with her, or he even went to one of her events she did. And he was just like, her, what? Like, he was genuinely confused. I thought it was a really interesting take. I didn't know where exactly it came from, but he was very, like, not opposed, but just surprised why her publication or she specifically would get picked up. I thought it was really interesting.
Well, and I mean, my knee-jerk reaction is not celebration. You know what I mean? It's skepticism. I can get, you know, how $200 million would be really enticing. And, you know, there can be a narrative of her selling out her independence in order for, you know, for money. And, but also at the same time, being the annoying optimist that I tend to be sometimes, I am hoping is what this actually is a sign of legacy media, of a legacy media realizing how royally they have screwed up and damaged their brand, and that they're trying to course correct. And then my hope is that other institutions will do the same thing, but that remains to be seen.
Yeah. All the people at the New York Times who worked with Barry, or who were her boss, you know, bosses. And then she just like lit a match and blew the whole thing up when she left. They're all going, oh, okay. If I'm reading Tim Dillon correctly, his was more like, why her? Why is she getting picked up? Like, you think it's such a, they're saying it's such a niche thing, Substack. Like, yeah, she could be big on Substack, but is she really at the center of this news movement? And he was real skeptical about that. And I was surprised by that. But also, we are perpetually online and very much on Twitter, where everything kind of crosses over and touches each other. And so I was thinking about it. I was like, well, do people outside of Substack and social media know about the free press? I certainly do. I've been following Barry for years, but
yeah, I think if we're talking about, there's like, you know, we always talk about there's categories of people. There's like the perpetually online, there's people of influence, you know, all this kind of stuff. Yeah. I think though that it's, maybe she doesn't have like normies, you know what I mean?
Like the boomers that sit at home and watch Fox News.
Yeah, or whatever, or even like the mom who's doing carpool or whatever, let's just say. That's just too busy and isn't someone who enjoys, or not enjoys, but wants to be informed on, not like, obviously not our listeners, because they're
love
awesome.
Being informed.
Exactly. That's why you're here. But I'm just talking about like my girlfriends. Like, I sent you that text thread the other day of some of my closest girlfriends. Like, they have no idea. They have no idea of who the Free Press is or even of anything that's going on in the world if I don't tell them. So I'm talking about those individuals. However, my speculation would be that not only has Barry Weiss and the Free Press created a very unique and niche, you know, news platform, but I guarantee you that that email list that she has is worth dollar bills, okay?
Yeah.
Because she probably has tech influence there. I bet you Jeff Bezos, who owns the Washington Post, who suddenly has changed his tune, is probably on that email list. And all of these other people people of influence and power. So
yeah,
I would, and who have actually shied away, who used to be the primary, you know, email list, which was the New York Times.
Yeah.
Like, let's be honest. So yeah, like it does seem very niche. And I don't know if it's $200 million worth, because I think the speculation is that I think they bring in maybe $15 million annually. But, you know, if you're trying to rebrand, if you're trying to get access to that email list, if you're trying to create something new, like, why would she switch over if you weren't going to offer her like a stupid amount of money?
Well, of course. And there are some things she has going for her. Like, I mean, she has a great podcast that a lot of people listen to. So that's already built in. But also she has great production quality. Everything they put out is really, really well done. They have a huge list of contributors. They do get breaking
stories. And diverse
stories.
Contributors. It's not just like one-sided. And they do those debate events, which I think are really awesome. On hot topic issues, too. They're not afraid to really cover like hot topic issues that are, you know, incredibly divisive, especially online and...
Yeah.
And they go for it. So that's a credit to
them. We're gonna see. I don't know. I hope that it doesn't kind of morph what the Free Press has grown to be.
Yeah, for sure. I'm concerned. So the other thing that happened yesterday, which I did a whole story on this because I just think it's really weird. So yesterday, Ro Khanna, who is representative from California, and Thomas Massie, representative Republican out of Kentucky, gathered together a 9 to 10 alleged Epstein victims. And I only say alleged, you know, because some of them Epstein wasn't charged in their cases. At a press conference outside the Capitol yesterday. And I watched a good portion of this press conference. And the goal here, let me just put this up front. The goal here isn't so much to get into the nitty-gritty details of the politics of this, but some things that I found particularly interesting and were revelations that I did not expect from this press conference. And so that's really what I want to talk about for today, because everybody else is talking politics, but I want to talk about what they're not talking about from this press conference. So it started off with did you watch any of this press conference?
No.
Okay.
I didn't. I forget what yesterday was. Was it Wednesday? I don't know. I was taking some child somewhere. No, I did not.
Well, to give you guys some background before we get into the press conference, the House Oversight Committee, I think the day before, or maybe it was on Monday, not Monday, because that was Labor Day, on Tuesday, released over 30,000 pages of documents that they had obtained in regards to Jeffrey Epstein. However, many of these documents, I think like 97%...
Most of them were already public.
Were already public. And the small amount that wasn't public wasn't really anything particularly significant. Mm-hmm. And the release of the documents, by the way, was like one of the worst formats that you could possibly release
these
documents.
Oh my gosh, I did open that. And I was like, what is this? Because I wanted to link it. I did link it for people on social media. But I was like, what does this even mean? This is like if I tried to put together like a Google Doc for America.
Absolutely. Not
and
even. I think you could do better.
Yeah, I really want to believe so. Because I opened that. I'm like, what is this? There's like one tab. And then did they literally make every single page a separate file?
An image.
Absolutely.
So that's the thing. You can't search it. Full documents, which you would typically open a document. Let's say the document's 94 pages. It would be one document. No, you had 94 separate images for a 94 page document.
No.
It was stupid. And because they were images, you can't
search them. So even if they had been provided as PDFs, you could at least download the PDFs and maybe make them searchable. It was stupid.
Yes.
And it almost makes you feel like they did not want you to review the documents. It was so egregiously.
Well, that or they were just so rushed and they are so over it and they do not care that they're like, fine, whatever. Just throw them a bone just here.
For sure.
And we don't even care if we're going to try and make it easy for them. No, we're not going to do that.
Now, this is all coming up again because Congress is back from recess and there's this push of the Epstein Transparency Act, something a lot, I think that's the title of it, where they're trying to get legislation or an act push to force the release of additional Epstein documents, additional from the ones that we've already released. Now, if you guys have been listening to us for a while, you know that there are challenges to this because, for example, it has been requested of the court to release like grand jury documents and testimony. And the court yet again has denied those requests. Yeah. So this whole thing of like just release the documents or release the list is a lot more difficult than most people think it is.
Yeah.
Now, what I want to talk about specifically is during the press conference, the way it was set up was at the beginning of the press conference, I think I didn't watch all of the victims and alleged victims speak, but many of them would speak and they would share their experience and their story. And one of the things that really stood out to me was because there was a viral clip of one of the women who spoke. Her name is Lisa Phillips. And it was going viral because in this clip, she says that they, as the victims, are compiling a list. And then they're going to show the list because there's a whole thing about this Epstein list. And I have her sharing that here. Can we hit play here?
And let me announce now, several of us Epstein survivors have been discussing creating our own list of names. We know the names. Many of us were abused by them. Now, together as survivors, we will confidentially compile the names we all know were regularly in the Epstein world. And it will be done by survivors and for survivors. No one else is involved. Stay tuned for more details on that.
So that was Lisa Phillips announcing how, and I found this interesting because this particular clip was going viral and being presented as in the victims are going to release an Epstein client list. Yeah. But if you actually listen to her, she's saying, we're going to create a list for survivors, by survivors, details to come. So, and it's going to be confidential. So my first thought is like, okay, so what is the point?
I did see, even though I have not paid as much attention to this, event as some people did. I did see Thomas Massie posted on X, and I talked about that this morning in my newsletter. He basically said that these people are they're not going to be able to compile it. They're not. They'll get sued up the wazoo. But that he said that him and Marjorie Taylor Greene are willing to name the names in the House of Representatives under constitutional speech or debate immunity. So, I mean, they would have to have somebody willing to go on the record and share. But I don't even know if that's their intention. She didn't make it sound like that was their intention.
She was actually asked by a reporter, and this is going to be a longer segment because this, to me, was the segment that said a lot and actually spoke a lot to the narrative that we have heard for a long time about several things, about a client list and also about a pedophile ring, which a pedophile ring would have the assumption, which is this is typically what has been discussed, that Jeffrey Epstein and Ghislaine Maxwell were trafficking underage girls to men of influence in his circle.
Right.
Correct. Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
So now, to also provide additional context, Lisa Phillips, I went and researched her, and her allegations stem from when she was actually first introduced to Epstein at 21 years old,
when she was modeling. So she was never underage at the time that she became acquainted with Epstein or Ghislaine Maxwell.
Okay, so this is a completely different allegation. That would be sexual abuse, but not of a not supporting the narrative that everybody's been running with Epstein, that it was always or for the most part underage girls that he was interested in and involved with. So she wasn't even a party to that herself.
Correct. And I went, and this is not to discredit her. I want to because to me, this is having a little Me Too-y vibes, which puts me personally on alert. Okay.
Yeah.
So she was 21 years old when she became, when she came to know him. She accuses Epstein and Ghislaine of sexually abusing her or assaulting her.
Okay.
However, there's also testimony that she later went to his New York apartment on multiple occasions and was like fending him off.
So she revisited the site of the perpetrator.
So initially
it
happened actually at his island or in Florida. I think actually initially it happened in Florida at his island. I would have to
double check that. Why would she go to his apartment?
That's my question. And she ended up being part of, like, there was like a civil suit or like a, what do you call it? A class action suit against JP Morgan. And she managed she did collect from that suit. But she doesn't disclose how much she collected from that suit. So, I mean, the point being here is that many people and who would assume that anyone who is speaking at this press conference was like 13 or 14 years old when they were abused by Epstein. And that is actually not the case, which was news to me. I'll be honest.
Learn anything about any of the other women that spoke yesterday?
Yeah. So like, for example, there was another woman, her name was Shanti Davis. And I actually have a clip of her. Let me share that one.
Epstein surrounded himself, with the most powerful leaders of our country and the world. He abused not only me, but countless others, and everyone seemed to look away. The truth is, Epstein had a free pass. He bragged about his powerful friends, including our current president, Donald Trump. It was his biggest brag, actually. And while what I endured will haunt me forever, I live every day with PTSD. I live as a mother trying to raise my child while distrusting a world that has betrayed me. This kind of trauma never leaves you. It breaks families apart. It shapes the way we see everyone around us.
Now, that information is known. And then I went to research and see when she became acquainted with him. Mm-hmm. And she was 22 years old when she became acquainted with Epstein.
Did anybody think to like ask this question of them? Not necessarily during the press conference, but maybe afterwards or any other journalist on
No,
social
actually,
media, like,
you want to know what a journalist asked this particular, let me see, where was it? I want to make sure I have the right one. Because she was asked to expand on what she said by a CNN reporter, and this was the question in her response.
The last survivor who just spoke, she said that Epstein would brag about her relationship with Donald Trump. Could she please elaborate about that?
And anybody
Shante.
Get to the microphones.
Yeah. Get close.
I did say that. My first trip to the Palm Beach residence, I drove there from the airport with Ghislaine Maxwell, and Jeffrey and Ghislaine were always very boastful about their friends, their famous or powerful friends, and his biggest brag forever was that he was very good friends with Donald Trump. He had an 8x10 framed picture of him on his desk with the two of them. Like, they were very close.
Go ahead.
Okay. Now, initially, I thought she was one of the minors. I thought she was like 13 or 14. So that would have put this interaction before Trump was before Trump had booted Epstein out of Mar-a-Lago.
Yeah.
She was actually 22 years old when she first became acquainted with Epstein.
That's what you said. But and listen, I think the hardest part about doing what we do is we live in a climate where you can't ask any questions or else you seem unsympathetic or like you don't believe what people are saying, when really we're just trying to understand fully what is exactly happening. And when I watched that happen, without knowing anything about her, what I and probably a lot of people who would watch it, your focus then initially like turns straight to Trump. And then again, that the only questions that the media would ask of someone like her is about the Trump portion of it, when it has been at like ad nauseum confirmed that he really had cut off ties with Jeffrey Epstein, that he wasn't great friends, you know, with him at the end, or even like, you know, for the past, what, decade and a half, like they just weren't super great friends. Yeah, they were at socialite events together and whatnot, but of course that's what the media asks, because I think that they want to continue resuscitating this narrative that Trump was in Epstein's orbit so much, you know what I mean, when really Epstein was an opportunist. Like, he just loved being around rich and powerful people. So of course, if he was once,
of course he bragged.
Like, yeah, of course.
And
he
if
did.
He had a picture, he kept the picture. Like,
yeah.
I don't know what you can do. And then actually, before this press conference, these survivors or victims were interviewed by NBC. And they were asked specifically on Trump and Bill Clinton, by the way. So I have a clip of that here.
I do have to ask, and I know, and it's just something that I think we're compelled to at this moment, with the attention on President Trump, with these questions around a pardon, did anybody see or hear of the president himself doing anything inappropriate as it related to Jeffrey Epstein?
No.
Or former President Clinton?
No.
And those are the same women that were at the press conference.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay.
So that kind of like, but my point is like, this is obviously, it's not being covered across the media.
Of course not.
And, you know, so let's just put the whole, now the Trump situation is set aside yet again, because it's been set aside multiple times. But this is a longer clip that I really wanted to kind of dissect. And I might have to pause it here while we talk about it, because it's, like I mentioned, it's a little bit longer. But this is at the press conference, and this is the attorney to the victims. And there's asked of clarification from a reporter. I can't remember where she's from, but she asks Lisa Phillips for more information on this alleged list that's going to be compiled by the victims.
Mm-hmm. One second.
Said it would be confidential, but will the public get to see that list?
So, Lisa, what's your envision here?
Is it going to go to the public or just amongst the survivors?
No, we're reaching out to survivors that are scared.
So, come on up.
We're reaching out to survivors that are scared to come forward and that also know who they were trafficked to. So, that's the list that we're compiling. We're not quite sure, you know, how we're going to release that, or even if we're going to. The Department of Justice needs to release the list.
Right, yes. For folks at home, they might be confused. You know, the survivors know the names. You've seen these powerful people. Why can't you say the names? Why do we have to say the names when
the government knows the names? And we're also scared to do so. Yeah. Look what's happened to so many of the survivors that have revealed names.
Yeah, I find the question about the bill.
I think it's also worth saying that having represented, I think, between our firm and Boyce Schiller, hundreds of victims, and we've talked to them about the various people that they were farmed out to. So we've created somewhat of a list. Most of these individuals, the victims, are very scared to say these names because they could get sued, they're going to get attacked, and nobody protected them the first time. And that was against one person. So is there a list? There is a list. But just to dispel kind of the common theme here, every one of these women was abused by Jeffrey Epstein, and his scheme was to personally abuse women. When they reached a certain age, he did farm a section of them, some of them, out to some of his friends. That doesn't mean all of his friends. With that said, I'm more than happy to assist in helping create the list behind the scenes and see what we do with it.
But if someone's interested,
hold on.
I think if someone's interested in prosecuting, they may have something different to say about sharing a list. But they're not sharing a list for nothing to happen. And that's the experience that they've had for all of these years.
Well, there's a lot there. Where would you like to start?
Well, first of all, there's a lot of wishy-washiness about a list, which to me, okay, let's actually take this from the perspective of what many people have been upset about and concerned about, which is the fact that there is a list that hasn't been released. Well, according to the attorney of the victims, there's no list. And the list that is being formed is being created by the victims themselves, which for some reason they're going to hold on for themselves unless certain, there's going to be some kind of prosecution or something like that. To me, that says that because like he mentioned, he said that Epstein trafficked or abused these women for himself. And then when they would reach a certain age, some of them were then introduced or farmed out, I think is the word that he used, to some of his friends. That to me takes away several things. It likely takes away any kind of accusation of a pedophile ring.
Right.
And then it really brings up to question if some of these women, when they did engage with these people of influence and power,
were they overage?
It sounds like to me that they were of age, which then becomes a lot more challenging to come up with some kind of criminal prosecution against those. Because we don't know if those men knew. We don't know if these women did it willingly, even if they were like coerced, which that would only apply to Epstein, who is dead.
Well, so I think it has, like, the whole thing was extremely ambiguous is a good word. It was really ambiguous. They're not being clear. And I don't know if that's intentional. It was not clear to me because what I heard the attorney saying is they have hundreds of victims. He has hundreds of victims. So when you say hundreds of victims, you could have easily said, I have interviewed 173 people, victims, and 25% of them are underage. You're not breaking the law by doing that. You're not endangering people's lives by saying something like that, but you're actually being clear. And then when he says these are with really, really powerful people, I doubt that he is an attorney to all of these women and he doesn't have a clear list of at least, you know, two dozen of these powerful people. So he could have said, we have a list. We have 25 names of extremely powerful people who engaged in, you know, sexual abuse of young children. And some of them were also of age, but nevertheless, it was sexual abuse. I just don't know why they're not being clear. And then
this is my concern, though, because you can't just look, especially after Me Too. I don't think it's justified. If we are no longer talking about a child sex trafficking ring that was being pushed out to like everyone,
which is what
everyone
it has always been. It has always
which is
been
what everybody has
like that. Yes.
Yeah, that's what everybody has believed it has been. To me, the attorney has dispelled that, at least in this situation. So if that is not the situation, you can't have, it is not justified to have adult women to just say, this guy harassed me and abused me, and you have no evidence of it, which is why they don't want to, this is my speculation, this is why they don't want to put the names out or the list, because then they can be sued for defamation because they have no evidence of it.
Right.
And that's
because they
where,
were
to me,
an adult at that point.
Correct.
And they were engaging in,
like Me Too-y. And that is completely separate from acknowledging that Jeffrey Epstein was a disgusting human being that took advantage of young women. These are two separate issues.
For sure. And also, I don't think what people realize is you ask these questions, we should want 1000% clarity when it comes to these kinds of things, as much as they can give legally and to protect the safety of minors. We want 1000% clarity when it comes to this, because if you do not have that, it is a disservice to children who are actually trafficked and abused. It
Absolutely.
Does a disservice to women who are trafficked and abused, because if we're going to label everything as sex trafficking and pedophilic rings, you know, that these tons of people are participating in and not, and we're going to just like label everything like that, then nothing is taken seriously, because you can't just say that and then not have any substantiated evidence and proof. You know what I mean? And so I understand that they're in a precarious situation, but if this is, like you said, like a Harvey Weinstein thing, where it's just a pig who is a serial like sex addict and an emotional abuser and coerces women into, you know, bed with them, that's one thing. And that is horrible and disgusting and gross. But that is much different than how the Epstein situation has been branded to America for years now, for years. And so that was what I took issue with that. And then also the kind of the fact that they're calling this press conference and wanting press there. And then press asks them questions, genuinely interested. Like, are you going to release this information? And they're like, why should we have to? And it's like, well, because you're saying you're going to have it. Like,
so it makes the whole thing come off incredibly political.
Well, and very theater-esque. It's like a production at this point. You know what I mean? It's like, if you have the information and you're telling them, we're getting the information, we're compiling the information, and we will have the information. And then someone says, can you give me clarification if you're going to release it? And then all the women behind her, too, were like, I'm offended. Why would we offer this information to you? We shouldn't have to do anything. And it's like, well, why are we all here then? Like, what? Yeah.
Well, and also it's worth mentioning that when the attorney was talking about specifically, like, this wasn't where he's basically dispelling this idea of a pedophile sex trafficking ring.
Right.
The women are behind him nodding their heads in acknowledgement. Like, nobody was pushing against him or opposing him in any way during that conversation. So, like, and then you have, now I will say this. So before this press conference, the women, along with Ro Khanna and Massey, met privately with other representatives. And Anna Paulina Luna has made a statement that in that meeting, there was revealed that Epstein had international connections or whatever to other governments and stuff. Now, that sounds juicy. However, let me pose an alternative to that statement. I have never questioned that Jeffrey Epstein, a man of influence who ran in circles of influence and managed a bunch of money, more than likely also ran in circles with men of influence in powerful positions of government.
Right.
I wouldn't be surprised if those individuals that were government leaders, let's say, maybe were pumping Epstein for information. The issue becomes, did those people know that he was abusing young underage girls and then they were willing to overlook that in order for them to still have access to that information?
Right.
Now, that is definitely a question worth asking and worth exploring, but that is completely different from a government agency using Jeffrey Epstein as some type of honeypot operation. And using a pedophile ring in order to conduct that operation.
Well, yeah, one makes those politicians skeevy, gross dogs. You know what I mean? Like that you would, right? And
but the question
is like corrupt.
Did they
and
do
illegal.
Anything illegal? Like,
that's what I'm saying. And if the government was using what they knew about Epstein being involved in a pedophile ring, well, that's corrupt and that's criminal. You just being a total, I don't even, swamp creature who thinks like that it's okay to kind of look, turn a blind eye to a guy who is engaging in this kind of stuff because you need information, you know, that's just makes you gross and a bad human. The other one implicates the federal government in criminal activity of the, you know, grossest type. So, like, again, clarity, clarity, clarity. We need clarity and no one's giving it, like literally nobody. So,
well, and then even like I'm thinking, oh, this is going to be the moment. They're going to drop the mic, the victims, and they don't.
Didn't.
In fact, at one point during this press conference, there was a his name is Michael Tracy, and he was invited by Ro Khanna's office.
Yeah, I follow him on X. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So he asked, I got two clips here. I have him asking a question and him being cut off and then by Marjorie Taylor Greene being kicked out of the conference.
What?
So let me play that one for you. Yeah, watch this.
But,
you represented Virginia Roberts for years. She eventually had to recant the allegations that she made against Alan Dershowitz. She alleged that at the
Next question.
Thank you.
Who's next?
Why is it that she should be?
Yeah, no, we're not answering your question. Anybody else?
Go ahead.
Oh, I cut the clip, but eventually Ro Khanna steps in, tries to, because they're saying, like, we're not answering the question, we're going to kick you out. And in case you guys didn't hear the question, he was asking about Virginia Dufresne, who is who is like the most recognized victim, who has recently passed away this year, and how she accused Alan Dershowitz of abusing her and then recanting it. So he's challenging because everybody there at the press conference is saying how Virginia is a hero. And then he's like, well, how can we believe her if she has been found to be lying on multiple occasions?
Right.
They cut him off. And then Ro Khanna says, no, 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 let's not kick him out. But then eventually later, Marjorie Taylor Greene says, get rid of him. All right.
Why? Like, he's literally asking a question that a lot of Americans would ask.
Yeah. Well, then this morning or last night, Bhatia Sargon, I forget her third. She has three names.
She has her new show. It's fantastic.
Yeah, she has a new show. Exactly. And she had Michael on for the new show to talk and give his side of
this. Catch.
So
I like it.
I'm going to go ahead and play that for everybody, too.
Michael, what happened?
Well, I was invited to attend this press conference, believe it or not, by Ro Khanna's staff. So I was an invited member of the press. I was duly admitted, and I waited my turn to ask a pertinent question. I posed the question to Bradley Edwards, who is a lawyer, who was one of the longtime legal antagonists of Jeffrey Epstein and represented many of Epstein's purported victims, including Virginia Roberts Gouffre, who was declared to have been deceased in April of this year. And throughout this press conference, Virginia Roberts Gouffre was being spoken of as though she were this truth-telling martyr, as though she had an unblemished record of credibility. She was the one who actually spawned, in large part, the initial theory that Epstein orchestrated a massive pedophile ring and enforced it through a blackmail operation which ensnared prominent people. Edwards is actually one of the two lawyers who filed the motion on Gouffre's behalf in 2014 that first introduced these allegations. So I wanted to ask Bradley Edwards, why is it that we should think of Virginia Roberts Gouffre as a remotely credible person given her demonstrable track record of repeat fabrications?
I mean, seems like a logical question to ask.
Well, it's a legitimate question to ask. I find it interesting that everybody was like, no, we're not going to answer that question. I mean, Marjorie Taylor Greene is even kicking him out or saying that he should be kicked out, which I think he was kicked out is what he says in that interview. And I knew of Virginia Dufresne, but if anything that he mentions there is true, well, that would align with what the attorney just said. And that dispels this pedophile ring. And it would be interesting to me that these victims are saying, no, 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 we're not going to answer that question. We're not going to talk about it because they don't want to answer the questions of the claims that she's made that have been proven to be false. Because there are claims that she made that have been proven to be false, which then would bring into the question all the other ones that she's
made. Well, her credibility, for sure. It's
exactly.
Like the boy who cried wolf. And that's why, again, going back to, we need clarity, because then when you don't have it, it makes other survivors reticent to come forward. They're like, forget it. No one's going to believe me because there's so many other women who have claimed victimhood and then been shown to be deceptive. And that doesn't always even mean that they weren't victims. That's the whole point.
Is that's
it's so
what I'm
sad
saying.
Because it's like, because people choose to lie or they get in too deep and they throw around accusations and then they recant them, well, then that totally leaves your actual victimhood status null and void. People don't want to believe you anymore. And that's a really, really sad thing. It's sad for them and it's sad for people who are, you know, they feel hopeless in coming forward because people aren't going to believe them. And it was interesting that every single person there, every single one of those women was like, stop, don't talk to him, don't talk to him, don't answer that question. It's a total like hive mind moment that was there and that he was shut down for like asking a basic question, very basic question that they all should be ready to talk about, by the way. They should know their answer to that. They should all be prepped and they have to know those questions are coming. This is such a high profile case. Like, and I did think it was interesting that Tracy said in that interview, basically like not really saying Gouffre was dead. But like she was,
he's like allegedly. It was like allegedly dead,
pronounced dead last April, and I was like, okay, new story, little side conspiracy action going on there.
Yeah, I know. So I don't. I've been, and to me, you know, the politics of this comes in, of course. you know, you have the Democrats are suddenly very interested in this. You have Massey joining Kana, and then also Marjorie Taylor Greene, which, you know, I think Marjorie Taylor Greene is in a different subject. But for me, Thomas Massey, he didn't really start pushing this until Trump said, I'm pushing like propping up the victims and this legislation until Trump threatened to primary him. He has brought up Epstein before, like, you know, and back in 2022 and 2024. But to be so aggressive on this issue, it isn't until now. And there's no question. I mean, you can like him. Massey's a little controversial. But to me, this is coming off as incredibly political. And I think like the goal of a press conference is to clarify questions. And what in fact this did,
they just literally made more. They made more questions.
Yeah. I think they made more.
And again, I get that those press, those kinds of things, especially ones like that, where you have this huge group of people impacted by one seminal event. And then you have the lawyers there. There were multiple lawyers. And it all, I don't care what it's about, Republican, Democrat, whatever, it just always comes off to me as so performative. And then if you actually have the press conference and then you, it doesn't produce any actual change or results or answers for the American public and for the press, in my opinion,
it makes
it's
more
just,
money.
It's, it does. It's pointless. And people are not going to take these seriously. You wonder why people like zone out when these kinds of things come up or we talk about these or we share a headline. They're like, really? Again, they just don't, they stop paying attention. Because everything
well,
feels
and to me, the,
performative
the,
and theatrical.
The meat of this story, the meat of this story is supposed to be this like pedophile ring. And I feel like this press conference tells you that that did not happen. And another thing I was going to point out, that this Sean T. Davis, the one that talked and said, you know, Epstein was real good friends with Trump and had this picture and then was asked again about it by CNN. She also mentioned that she went on, and I don't have the clip on me, but if, you know, it's out there, that she went on a trip to South Africa and with Epstein and some other men of influence, and that Bill Clinton was also on that trip. However, then you have that NBC interview
where
that says,
like, no, Bill Clinton wasn't involved.
He didn't, they didn't do anything. So
it's like, which like, one? Just switch one.
Well, my point being here is that she, to me, she becomes even more suspicious because she was 22 years old when she was introduced to Epstein. And she's just dropping names for guilt by association without any evidence that anybody did anything wrong.
Right.
So it just,
again,
you know, now
credibility shot every single time.
Who doesn't help this entire situation is, again, our president, who during his press conference while he was with the president of Poland,
he's like, it's a hoax.
Yeah. Let's. Well, I mean, we've all heard it before.
Like,
but
stop
here we go.
Saying that. Like,
right now, there have been survivors of Jeffrey Epstein speaking at a press conference on Capitol Hill. They're calling for these case files, these documents to be released. And Thomas Massie, who is sponsoring a discharge petition to get the House to vote on releasing those documents, says he doesn't believe you're implicated in these files, but many of your friends and donors may be. And he says that's why the Justice Department is redacting them and slow walking the release. Is the Justice Department protecting any friends or donors, sir?
So this is a Democrat hoax that never ends. You know, it reminds me a little of the Kennedy situation. We gave him everything over and over again, more and more and more, and nobody's ever satisfied. From what I understand, I could check, but from what I understand, thousands of pages of documents have been given. But it's really a Democrat hoax because they're trying to get people to talk about something that's totally irrelevant to the success that we've had as a nation since I've been president.
Now, that is very, it's very frustrating. Like this, he continues to say it's a hoax. And that was one of the things that came up multiple times during the press conference. They were like, you know, don't say this is a hoax. You were helping us back, you know, during your first administration. Why aren't you now? We're real victims. Stop saying this is a hoax. And I agree. Stop saying this is a hoax. Be a little bit more specific about what you actually mean. Which what I think he means is what we have been saying during today's episode is that it's not what people are trying to make it out to be. And Trump is not connected to it the way the Democrats are trying to make it seem.
Yeah, it's again, it's with optics and messaging. And what he needs to say is what happened was deplorable and disgusting. What happened to these women? If they were abused, as they are claiming they were abused, and as many of us know, they've been abused, it was horrible. But how the Democrats are framing it, that's the hoax. And that's what people need to be aware of. But when he comes out and he's just like, the whole thing's a hoax. Well, you're just giving red meat to Democrats who are like, how dare you call, you know, these victims liars and say that this didn't really happen. You know, like, why is his PR team not telling him to reframe? You know what I mean?
Well, I mean, honestly, if you tell him, do you think he's going to listen?
No.
Like, this is one of the most undisciplined, like, let's just be honest.
No.
In fact, provide more color to what you just said. I watched this on CNN, and the chyron on CNN after the press conference ended and they went over to Trump, which was up for like a good well past after the subject had ended.
Of course.
The chyron said, Trump says Epstein's case is, quote, Democrat hoax, minutes after numerous survivors say, quote, this is not a hoax. The abuse was real.
Yeah.
Bro.
I mean, what do you expect? What does he expect? And why do you think, if he wants it to go away so bad,
then just say, translator.
Yes, of course.
Ugh. Yes. Like, give the victims some sympathy, because obviously I don't think anybody believes that Epstein didn't do what he did. And I hate to say this, but what does it matter? The guy is dead.
Yeah.
Throw him under the bus. I don't know. Yeah. Whatever. You know what I mean? Like, just be honest.
Yeah.
Like, it's not that hard. And it's, I said to you yesterday when we were texting, it's like, you need like J.D. Vance to come in and translate this, because this is really, it's annoying.
He is the Donald whisperer. He is.
Yes.
He can and definitely translate.
It's getting ridiculous. So before we wrap us up, I want to share a clip, because yesterday, when we've talked about this, I think on Tuesday's episode, we had Putin, Xi, and
Kim Jong-un.
Modi. We're visiting. And then yesterday, some clips came out because Kim Jong-un was also present for the Beijing military parade, which Putin was in attendance of.
Yep.
And two things happened. So one, interestingly, which I wish I should have grabbed the video of this, but there is video of Kim Jong-un having sat in a chair, I guess, like during a summit or a meeting.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And then when he gets up, his assistants come in and they rub the entire chair down, like they clean it.
After getting rid of his DNA, like they want no trace of Kim Jong-un.
That's the report. The report is that anytime Kim Jong-un gets up, they like wash the area that he was sitting in of his DNA.
No fingerprints, nothing.
And I think they said that the concern is that they don't want anybody testing the DNA to see if he has any kind of medical conditions, which would then undermine his power. Which I'm like, okay, clearly it's like, because he looks like the picture of health.
That's what I think of.
Exactly. And then the other one that I wanted to share, I actually have the audio for this, and it's going to sound a little bit funny because it's the audio's through a translator. Mm-hmm. And this is Xi and Putin with a bunch of other, you know, assistants or whatever, walking up the ramp to get ready to attend the presidential parade. And it's the military parade for Beijing, for China. And this is a hot mic moment that gets picked up. And this is a very bizarre conversation.
In the past, people rarely lived longer than 70 years. But today, they say that at 70, you are still a child.
Human organs can be continuously transplanted.
This is Putin speaking now.
The longer you live, the younger you become, and can even achieve immortality.
What?
So the claim is that they were talking about organ transplant, and how if you keep transplanting like new organs into people, that you could possibly achieve immortality.
What? No, you can't, because you're transferring organs. Like, you're transferring your... Are they saying that... I don't know what they're saying. These are the moments, though, when I hear conversations like that. I am like, you guys, when you're talking about these world leaders, like, they're super strategic and they have, like, these huge end goals and they're playing this 4D chess. I am like, these guys aren't as smart as you think they are. Like, they are just, like, sixth grade boys talking about wanting to live forever and be like Superman. They're not, I mean,
well,
it's
and
so
it
weird.
Makes me wonder, because these are two dictators who, if correct. They could live forever, they would live forever.
For
so,
sure.
Absolutely. So to me, there's no question that they're talking about how they're trying to live forever.
Yes. It's
I mean,
so,
how much plastic surgery has Putin had?
I
the guy's
know.
Face is tighter than and more filled up.
Yes. But it's just so, again, these are the moments I remember when people are like, yeah, he, you know, I'd be afraid. He is really cooking up something strategic. And I'm like, I don't know if he might be more simple than we think. Like, I don't know. I mean, even Trump, I can hear them saying that to Trump, and Trump be like, what are you talking about? Like, even he would think it's stupid, right? I mean, I really think
I don't
so.
Know if he would think it was stupid. I think he might be like, I don't, I mean, I think
tell
he'd
me
think
more.
It was crazy.
Tell me more.
But he'd be
tell
very
more,
interested
Vladimir.
In the yeah. theory.
Maybe. I don't know. I just, it's so silly. It's just so silly.
He's like, well, now maybe I could run for 2020.
Yeah. Or 2038. I mean, who knows? So weird.
Can you imagine if he was caught on a hot mic? Like,
that's it.
Part
they would,
in
they
that
would
conversation?
Move to Article 25. Like, they would oh. want to, they would say he is senile now and he needs to
absolutely
to be stepped down. Yeah, he's stepped
I
down.
Mean, they're just like, I love hot mic moments because you get some of the most wild conversations.
You really do.
It's so funny to me, honestly. It's like the last one was Maloney, where she was like, I hate talking to my press.
Yeah. I mean, honest. She's honest.
It's like you get like the true color and mm-hmm. thoughts of these leaders. Yep. So do you have anything else that you want to add in before I start wrapping this up?
I don't.
Okay. Well, we would love to hear your thoughts on today's stories, especially when it comes to the press conference of the Jeffrey Epstein alleged victims. And, you know, it's not a story that I had followed a whole lot, but I'm actually a little bit more intrigued now that I yeah. have more context and I've mm-hmm. seen some of them speak for themselves as opposed yeah. to what other people are interpreting on their behalf.
Yeah.
So, and it's not going to be the last of it because they're still trying to get the votes to get this Transparency Act pushed through, which Johnson seems to be in opposition to. I don't know. This is not over. And I guarantee you Trump would love for this to be over.
Yeah.
But especially as the midterms approach. But that's yep. it. That's all we have for today's episode. We'd love to hear from you. Please drop your thoughts in the comments. If this is your first time here, welcome. You have found your new favorite podcast. Make sure you hit that follow button so you don't miss another episode. We're here every Tuesday and Thursday. If you'd like to see our lovely faces in the entire episode, please consider becoming a paying supporter on our Substack. Are you voguing over there?
I am.
Where you'll get the plan. Here's the plan. So we're going to be releasing, we've been releasing the videos on Substack. Now, my plans are to release the videos early on Substack. So as soon as we finish here, I'm going to clean it up real quick and I'm going to publish it on Substack. And you're going to get it first and you're going to get it pretty close to unedited. So it'll be similar to kind of how our unfiltered episodes are, and they will be ad-free. So if you want the episode early and you want it raw, please consider becoming a paying supporter. You'll also have access to our unfiltered episodes and to community benefits. There is a link in the show notes where you can get a discount code to our Substack. Then, once we get all our technological gremlins worked out, we'll be releasing the full episodes later in the day on our YouTube channel. But of course, you'll periodically be getting ads on those. So it's better if you join the Substack. And that's it. That's all I have for today's episode. Any thoughts, concerns, Rachel, additions?
No, I have a meeting tonight. My daughter is joining a speech and debate team. And I would appreciate it if there was no like breaking news.
News.
Also, yeah. Also, yes, I do have a thought. Now that I think about it, I got a mega desk in our back room. So no more
she
small
did.
Desks. I got a big desk with a huge monitor. And I have my television back here and I have a laptop. I need to get a new laptop because mine is trash, but it's very exciting. I have now the ability to open more than one window at a time and work
applause.
In two windows. I know. So yes, be happy for me with mega desk.
She wants to be
thank
like
you.
Mercedes. That's what it
I
is.
Do. I do want to be like Mercedes. That's true. and I'm just so excited. Yeah.
Well, applause for Rachel now becoming,
thank you,
having big girl computer set up.
I know.
That doesn't mean that I'm going to be able to know how it works. And there's a lot of wires. And last night I started crying.
You guys, literally every time we're about to record and we're setting up, and as we, this is one of the reasons, okay, as we've been doing this new video setup,
I have to walk Rachel through for the last like three episodes how everything needs to be connected so we can hear her. So
correct. It's part of my charm. It's part of my charm. Is.
I can't pronounce anything and she doesn't know how to use a computer.
It's true. It's not usually the computer that's not working. It is my brain. No. So.
It's user error. All right. But we love you anyways. And
thank
we
want
to thank everyone for being here. If you enjoyed this episode, please consider please give it a 5-star rating, leave a review, and share it with a friend because it really helps the podcast grow. And please go over to our YouTube channel and become a subscriber. We're at like 800 and I think 36 subscribers. And our first goal is 1,000. So can you be one of those?
Please.
Yes, you can. Please go do it. Okay, that's it. That's all we have. Here's a reminder that the media is trash and we have no tolerance for it. Okay, bye.
Bye.